Welcome to the Urology Coding and Reimbursement Podcast, where we help urologists and staff achieve peak economic and practice efficiency so there is time and energy to focus on patient care and a happy life. I'm your host, Scott Painter, with my co-hosts, Mark Painter and Dr. Ray Painter.
Today's episode is brought to you by ModMed. Do your EHR and PM adapt to your style of practice? The ModMed EHR and PM do, with benefits like remembering preferences and automatically suggesting documentation and billing codes. Urologists voted ModMed the number one urology-specific EHR and PM solution available, built by urologists with input from yours truly. Stop wasting 60 minutes and 200 for each of your open or no-show slot. Go to modmed.com/PRSnetwork. Set up an appointment with the team at ModMed Urology and shift your urology practice into high gear. Imagine a solution on a tablet or the web that works seamlessly with revenue cycle management, analytics, telehealth, payment processing, patient engagement tools, and much more. ModMed is transforming healthcare by placing doctors and patients at the center of care.
Welcome to episode 155 of the Urology Coding and Reimbursement Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Painter, with my co-host Mark Painter and Dr. Ray Painter. And on today's episode, we're going to cover staff shortages and what people are doing out there and give you some solutions that others are doing and some suggestions of that we have as well. So let's dive right in. Mark, do you want to share what you're seeing out there?
So it's definitely interesting. It is probably one of the common themes everybody's dealing with. And by everybody, I mean everybody. From the offices through to some of those that are supporting various offices that are out there. Everybody is complaining, and you know, ultimately the numbers would bear that out in the unemployment rates being so low. But you know, the fact that it's harder to keep people, it's harder to stay up with some of the wage increases, that are out there. It's become a common complaint across the board, from MAs to front staff to billing staff to coders, and of course, you know, with hospitals paying higher rates and insurance companies owning folks, it's become a staggering issue that everybody's up against. You know, what we've seen are some creative solutions across the board, and certainly, you know, in talking with some folks, people are beginning to explore things that they thought they would never do to actually meet the shortage issues, because, you know, not having the staff to support everybody slows down the number of patients you can see. And then, of course, slows down, you know, the back end collections and everything that you're dealing with. So there's a few things that we're starting to see folks do that have been at least marginally successful. There is no magic bullet out there for anybody. But I would say a combination of multiple things, I think, are what are ending up providing at least some solutions, not 100%. So one of the solutions that I've heard folks doing is they are picking up, when they can, temporary help. So folks that they know are only going to be there for a little bit of time. You know, college students, folks that are thinking about a career in medicine, those types of folks actually are a decent source to go for. Now, you know, they're going to be temporary, so it makes it difficult for folks to invest the time and effort in training. And, you know, even though some of these younger people that are in that potential temporary role are very good with computers and tend to be a lot faster at picking things up than some of the other traditional labor pool that is often addressed or sought for in the market space. They still need to understand and get some training in a particular office. And this is where those folks that have really well-defined roles for their personnel and what they can and can't do really help. And actually, that helps for just about any group that you're hiring, and especially with all the turnovers that are being done. So it is a big part of the process of making sure that you've got your protocols and procedures and your job definitions set up and ready to go to deal with places that are high turnover and even low turnover, given the shortages. So those folks that have developed decent training protocols, even using videos to help train their new people, have, embracing the fact that they are going to have turnover and figuring a way to get people up to speed more quickly, is kind of that base level foundation that I would say is helpful regardless of where you're finding your labor pool. So that would be one: develop your protocols, develop your training piece. And then the second would be expand who you're looking, who could potentially fill the slots. Don't be as concerned with those folks that might be temporary, but grab, you know, kind of like an NFL draft, the best talent available and shove them in and work with them for as long as you can. So that's one thing. The other thing that we're starting to see people do, and that we have embraced as part of from the pandemic, are people who don't work in the office. So being able to set up your procedures and your computer systems to allow people to work from home, or work from home at least some of the time, so you're not driving them into the office all the time. That expands your labor pool quite a bit, but it does have to be the right job in the right fit, of course, for that. And it does take significant monitoring to build that up. So that's, you know, both of those require some lift to build the infrastructure, but they certainly expand your options for filling holes in your overall practice.
Question for you on that.
Yeah.
So when you get somebody working from home, obviously you've got the HIPAA issues, and that's what you're talking about as far as your infrastructure and building that out from a technology side of things. How big of an investment, and I know I'm not going to ask you for specific dollars, but how big of an investment is that? Is that a sizable investment that you have to commit to? Do you have to get an IT company if you're not, you know, a health IT company? How is the best way to do that?
Yeah, in the searches that we did, we ended up working with an IT company, and that solved a lot of problems. Now, I know a lot of folks have IT support that is provided to them by local IT companies, and those can work. We ended up going with a national group through Coker to actually get that infrastructure set up, and they help us by building the computers out in a way that actually the computer is sent out in a configuration that is HIPAA compliant by the way that you log in with multi-factor authentication and authentication chips and those types of things, which then secure the information relative to what the folks are doing and how they're communicating online. So it is a lift. Now the technology is there so that it's not as expensive as it used to be by a long shot. But it does take a big lift in the very beginning to get everybody onto systems that are HIPAA compliant. Now, most people's electronic medical records, and if you're using some of the newer forms of the electronic medical records, have essentially logins that can make things IT compatible or HIPAA compliant for that part of it. It's the communication outside of that with the office that needs to have some extra work done. We've elected to go with Teams, but there are other platforms that allow for HIPAA compliant communications, but you do need to make sure that those are done appropriately. And it does take some IT expertise to do that. And you can do it either locally or nationally, but you definitely want to get that assistance for your group.
Mark, let me ask you a question at that point. Now, you use Coker because you are taking over the billing for a number of practices, some of them big practices, and you need to change a lot of computers when you do that. So Coker made a good sense for you. But will Coker do that for a small practice at a reasonable price?
I mean, in the end, there are some pricing that they've done that made sense to smaller groups, but it didn't make sense to all of the groups that we worked with. And some of those groups went with local IT support. And some have been good and some have been not as good. So you do need to vet who those groups are. And ultimately, there is an expense that you need to build in to support that if that's the direction you choose. So it is not a one size fits all by any means. And it does take shopping around. So it is a resource commitment to get there.
All right. Now I have a more important question to ask in relation to training personnel. I know that you've set up a structure within PRS, the managed services, where you can hire an inexperienced CPC coder and train them into coding to where they're really a useful part of the staff. And you've got good structure set up for training new employees. But could you do the training for another practice? Have you set that up? When they hire a new employee that needs some training, either in front office material work, receptionist or anything, do you offer any support for that?
So, yeah, we do. I mean, obviously we've got from the coding side, through PRS, we've got the coding courses and, the overall fellowship program to help build up their coding knowledge that's specific to urology and really focuses on the specifics related to urology coding with some additional training and auditing and those types of things. So we can do that part. Now the upfront training for your front office staff and some of those programs, we do have some basically one-on-one training programs, or not necessarily one-on-one, but group training programs, where we put folks onto a webinar and train those. So those have been kind of the two points that we've worked with. And then the other one that we found people need to leverage
and they do this either internally or through their vendor, is, you know, the training relative to their practice management system or their EHR or both. That is usually most of those groups have decent videos and training, but going through and identifying what are the most beneficial parts of that so that you've actually targeted your training to the needs of your individuals is something that ultimately is dependent upon the job description of each one of your employees. So it's a mixed bag of, yes, some of the stuff we're set up to do, but some of the stuff that needs to be done training-wise really needs to come from the appropriate vendors that you're using within your practice. So it's a mix of multiple areas that you can tap for those resources.
Well, and we have a little different perspective as a company because we work with a lot of practices in a lot of different states, in all states, and a lot of different geographic in cities and towns, small or big, urban. For most practices, they tend to be in a geographic area. And when they think of work from home, you know, I think a lot of them think of hiring people within their community to work from remotely at home. What about national, or what about going beyond the borders of the geographic location where a practice is located? Has that been successful, and how would you go about suggesting somebody do that if they don't have the talent in their pool, in their community?
Yeah, again, ultimately it boils back down to the same thing, where, I mean, remote is remote in many ways. Now, going outside the borders of the country is a totally a different lift from the training standpoint and from the actual logistical standpoint. And, you know, not all practices are really ready to offshore services. And we've had limited groups that we work with that provide that we can work with as they go through that process. So that's a different ball game than making it remote within the U.S. So the IT is still there, the training is still there, but certainly we've had folks. And we are also in that boat where we're hiring people around the country to actually provide services. And then, you know, you've got a couple of different aspects that you've got to consider when you're doing that. And again, whether you've got somebody working from home that's 10 miles away or, you know, 1,000 miles away, the actual training and IT and HIPAA issues are the same. And so is the monitoring that's required. So, you know, ultimately you want to make sure that people are incentivized to work. They're doing what they're supposed to do. They're putting in the efforts. They're not logging in and not doing any work. So you've got to have monitoring of those things. And all those take time and infrastructure to get set up. But once that's done, you can find people that are capable of working remotely.
All right.
And then the last part is, you know, of course, you can look at outsourcing portions of your support completely. There are groups out there now that provide as a service, you know, anything from, you know, as everybody's known for a long time, revenue cycle management is one that people can outsource. And that's become a choice that some folks are making based on, you know, the fact that that is a percentage of gross collections for most revenue cycle management groups. And you're shifting that problem of labor
to then that other company. And obviously that's something that requires a good partnership with your outsource team. There's outsource coding services that are available. And we do that for a number of folks. Again, you've got to make sure you've got all your IT infrastructure and whoever you're working with has their IT and their HIPAA compliance and their training appropriate for urology. And then there are groups that can answer your phones or they can do your scheduling. So from, you know, we are becoming a world that is based on not just your own internal labor, but a group that or a company or a country that uses labor and outsourced corporate support for everything from the full service to bits and pieces here and there. So all of those things are part of it, and you know, including your eligibility checking, your research and your qualifications, your prior authorizations, with the IT infrastructure, that can be done and is being done by a lot of folks.
What about, you know, we talk about this being an immediate problem that you have to solve, obviously, to keep your practice up and functioning. What about contractors, you know, paying a little bit higher price to get somebody in so that you can then implement some of those other solutions you've mentioned? Have you seen that happen as well?
What do you mean?
So paying a little bit higher price to get somebody in to solve that problem, even though you're paying more for that particular service than you would normally. But you're throwing money at the problem to get it solved immediately so that you can solve it in a better way long term. Or is it just doing without and having people understand?
I mean, money and value are a couple of different things that everything that you deal with comes into play, right? And ultimately, you know, not paying or not doing something that is required will cost you. There are definitely, you know, everything from selling out, right, for selling the entire business to try and get some infrastructure in, which is an option for a lot of folks to, bringing in the help to actually set it up internally, to again contracting with somebody else. All of those I think are areas that you have to consider, and people are considering. And as we're watching these activities across the country, it's a bit of a scramble, but there are options and opportunities. Some may cost more but provide the value back that you need. I would definitely say that as you look at dealing with each of these and what we've seen groups deal with, the cheapest solution isn't always the best solution. And that's how it has always been, and it is true here.
Yes.
And Mark, you make a good point. I think that, you've been and PRS Managed Services has been a living example of that. What may appear to be a little more expense when you take over the billing for a practice may seem like a little more of expense, but in the long run, you've been able to improve the income to more than offset the cost. And the same thing with your audits. Your audits may cost a little more than other audits, but the way you do the educational part of the audit to not only be sure that the audits are correct, but be sure the communication is such that the practice knows what they need to improve on probably is worth it as well.
Yeah, I mean, it boils back down to value, right? That the cost, you know, needs to be set up so that the value that you get or the income relative to that has to make sense. And that's, you know, that's just a straight business decision that needs to be made and needs to be continually monitored. So you're right. I mean, it's, you know, if you're shop based on cost alone, that's, you know, as you've seen in everything you do in life, sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. And we've always believed that the value doing things right is, you know, does pay for itself. And we've been able to prove that.
All right. Anything else you want to add on today's topic, Mark?
I wish I had a magic bullet. That's the, you know, ultimately what you've got is a situation that every group needs to understand and analyze and deal with. And it is not a problem I see that's going away in the short term. And of course, the other thing we're going to see thrown at a lot of this stuff is automation. So, you know, leveraging your tools to your max is going to be a key part of life. Making sure your EHRs and your staff is set up to leverage your eligibility checkers and all of that stuff that is available to you. You need to make sure you understand your systems, your protocols, your procedures, and what's available to you, and make sure everybody's on board utilizing those. So it's a combination of work better, plan better, train better.
Indeed. All right. Let's wrap this episode up here. Let's go around for some final thoughts and Ray, let's start with you. Final thoughts.
Well, Mark, when you were talking about employees, I didn't hear you mention part-time, but that's another pool that they might consider, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And thanks for bringing that up. Part-time is a big support. You can job share. Again, if, as long as everybody knows what they're supposed to do, job sharing is a or part-timing things is a great option.
And if I heard you correctly, why, when you're looking for somebody and you can't find the exact fit for what you're looking for, you want to hire the brightest, the most capable, and the most motivated individual, and then train them. Is that correct?
Yes.
If possible, right? I guess.
And if you need
the best that you can get.
and would be remiss if we didn't say that PRS has worked hard to set up the infrastructure to assist the practice with whatever they need. So if you need help with providing functions or training, et cetera, give us a try.
Yeah, you can go to prsnetwork.com, and right on the homepage is a contact us button. If you're having trouble and you want our help, we're happy to help and point you in any direction that we can. So, okay, final thoughts, Mark.
Well, I think the old adage that it takes a village is definitely true here. What I've seen as I've traveled around are a lot of great ideas, a lot of great solutions going through things. And, you know, nobody has the one single set of answers. And, you know, we certainly try and share what we've seen with everybody. And certainly reach out to others to get that information as well and see what they've got. You know, competitors are not necessarily competitors in every sense. So, you know, make sure you're looking around and look outside your box, because there are options, maybe not the easiest ones, and it may require some change, but it's time to think outside the box for some of these things.
Well said. All right. That's it for this episode. We want to remind you that the Urology Advanced Coding and Reimbursement Seminar registration is open. We'd love to have you join us in Las Vegas in December or in January in New Orleans. We've got a lot of good things on the agenda this year, and we'll be releasing that next month, the official agenda. So we're excited about what we have and the speakers that we have joining us. So if you want to register for that and you want a link to that, again, you can go to prsnetwork.com, and there's right on the homepage, there's a seminar link where you can register. Or if you want to go to the episode page, prsnetwork.com/155 for episode 155. We also would like to thank ModMed for supporting this episode. If you have a chance, please check out their EHR and practice management solutions. You can go to modmed.com/PRS network for specials for our podcast listeners. So we encourage you to check that out. That's all we got. Take us out, Ray.
Happy coding.
Thank you for listening to the Urology Coding and Reimbursement Podcast, where we help urologists and their staff maximize income and efficiencies so there's time and energy for patient care and a happy life. Special thanks to Carl Painter for the music today. You can find his music on Spotify under his record label, Fiduciary.